Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. We start 2019 with a question. Can you identify the Masked Singer? A panel of notables start guessing tonight when Fox debuts its first original series this year. Executive producer Craig Plestis joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. The new co-star in Botch's future, right on time for season 5. Meet Tim Lunibus and learn what he's up to when away from Amazon's hit drama next half hour. Also ahead, Fuse minus one-third of Fuse Universe, spring and winter football returns via CBS, and we remember a theme song master and Super Dave. Hey, everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, Happy New Year, and tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A great start to this new year to you and all, and welcome once again to the program All About Television, now in its 12th year on the air, and later this year we'll be marking 10 years on Blog Talk Radio. Great to have you aboard. For those who don't know me, I'm Simon Applebaum, and today I'm starting my 39th year of covering the world of television as a journalist, and it's great to have you aboard. For those of you joining us for the first time, this is the program All About the World of Television, where it's at and where it's going. Now, this program, you'll hear live, extended, exclusive interviews with the people who make the medium happen. And we always invite you to be in the conversation. All you have to do, give us a call. Here's how you do it. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Another way you get involved is our chat room. It's open for business right now. We have just 57 already in the room. And all you have to do is go to SimonApple04. That's the room. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you. And while the program is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Before we get to our guest for today, let's do a feature that we do usually at the top of every program. We call it News Notes, the latest news in the world of television. Fuse, the multicultural-minded network with Jennifer Lopez as an investor, and is 2019 with more than a third of its cable subscriber universe unable to see it. In separate decisions, Comcast and Verizon's Fios TV operation canceled the channel after their current agreement expired December 31st. Both Comcast and Fios say their call to drop Fuse was based on feedback over channel lineup alignment. Fuse officials are outraged that the channel has increased its viewership by double digits in some audience surveys this past fall. No word yet what Fuse will do to get back on Comcast and Fios TV. Without both cable operators, Fuse has about 40 million subscribers. That's two-thirds of its base before the channel drops. Another go at the Professional Winter Spring Football League is set to launch on CBS next month. 8 teams from San Diego to San Antonio will comprise the Alliance of American Football. Its debut season runs from February 9th to April 27th. CBS will carry the opening and championship games in primetime, with CBS Sports Network presenting a weekly matchup Sunday afternoons starting February 10th. More coverage details may be announced next Thursday when CBS brings reporters together here in New York to review plans for Super Bowl 53, February 3rd. This is the first winter spring pro pigskin enterprise since the NFL on NBC 17 years ago. Oh, by the way, they're trying to revive that league, yes, under Vince McMahon, next winter and spring. Believe it or not, it's time again to turn the classic newspaper account of strange oddities all over the world into a television series. This time, the honors go to Travel Channel, set to play 10-hour-long episodes of Ripley's Believe It or Not. Actor Bruce Campbell, last seen series-wise on Ash vs. Evil Dead on Starz, will participate as host and executive producer. One other note, 2019 marks the 100th anniversary of Robert Ripley's creation, Believe It. And the last hour, we learned that Bob Einstein, the famous comedy writer and variety show writer behind such wonderful classics as the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, but better known to maybe more of you as that crazy stuntman Super Dave Osborne, passed away at the age of 76. Super Dave first was seen as a character on the syndicated series Bizarre, then later had its own series for several seasons on Showtime. His last major role was as co-star on the popular HBO Larry David comedy, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Once again, Bob Einstein, Super Dave Osborne passed away at the age of 76. And that is News Notes for today. Before we get to our first guest, a little historical context. In the first decade of television existence back in the 1950s, celebrity guessing games was a bit of a rage. For example, there was What's My Line, where in the course of trying to figure out various occupations of people, every week the mystery panel would pursue a mystery guest. They'd be blindfolded, and they tried to guess the celebrity basically by voice. A little while later, there was I've Got a Secret, where they would have a celebrity guest every week, and you would have to figure out the secret. Maybe the most elaborate of the bunch in that day was Masquerade Party. It ran for several seasons at various networks, where you would have celebrities gained in established makeup and costume, and again, a panel of notables would have to figure out who the celebrity was. At the end, whether they got the person or not, the celebrity would get all this this mound of makeup off them, plus the costume a little bit, and reveal their true identity. Well, tonight, Fox is going to take that masquerade a whole big level with The Masked Singer. It's based on a South Korean format, and it premieres tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. It is Fox's first new TV series of this year. Joining us live from Los Angeles, in Air Radio Exclusive, the executive producer of the series, is credits include Minutes to Win It, and he is Craig Plessis. Craig, Happy New Year. Welcome in.
Happy New Year, and thank you for having me join in on your show.
Thank you very much. It's nice to have you as our first guest. Would you say this is the most elaborate program you've ever done?
You know what? It really is. I've done a lot of programs at my time, you know, as a producer and also as an executive over at NBC, but this one really is the most ambitious and biggest show that I've ever worked on. And not only is it just a gigantic spectacle, it was just an incredible feat to keep everything secret.
And by secret, that you're talking about these masked singers, because it's not just one masked singer, there's a whole group of them, and they appear in various episodes throughout the series, and it's up to the celebrity panel to figure out who's who.
That exactly is it. And as you were talking about, you know, there's a lot of the genesis of the show. By the way, the show itself from South Korea is enormous. It's one of the biggest shows in Korea, if not the biggest show. When Ryan Reynolds went over to promote Deadpool earlier last year, he went on only one show in South Korea, and that was The King of Masked Singer, which is where this show originally came from. And that just shows you the might of that franchise when you have a star of his caliber, that if he only had one show to go on in that city, in that country, that he picked The King of Masked Singer. It really is a phenomenal, mind-bending mystery wrapped up in an enigma, wrapped up in just crazy fun.
What was the toughest part about putting this series together? And how did you, and I would think the toughest would be a maximum question here, is getting all of these award-winning music superstars to A, do the show, and then B, get into these costumes, makeup, elaborate, you know, performance get-up, and do their thing.
Oh, you know what? That's a very good question. And you know, when I first got the show, and when Fox had loved to do it. By the way, they were very scared initially, going, "Oh my gosh, this is so weird. Can we pull it off?" And luckily, they were behind it 110%. But they really held my feet to the fire and said, to be able to do the show, you have to cast it with incredibly big names. Luckily, I had an incredible team behind me that helped cast it. But it wasn't easy, I got to tell you. You know, some people looked at it and went, it's a little too weird for me. I'm not sure about that. Other people who watched a bit of it and saw some of the Korean show thought it was phenomenal and joined right in. And that was really the litmus test. Anybody who wanted to be on the show really had to be passionate for us. And then also on the Fox side, for the people who were the contestants on the show, when the mask came off, they really had to be someone everyone in America would recognize in 2 seconds. It can't be the bartender from a small sitcom from 1975. These are all big stars. I mean, the list is incredible that we have. We have 65 Grammy nominations total with these people, 14 Grammy wins, 16 Emmy nominations, 4 Emmy wins, 4 Hollywood Walk of Fame, 3 New York Times best-selling books, 45 gold records, 16 platinum records, 2 diamond records, Golden Globe nomination. If you add up all the films these people were in, they were over 155 films, 9 Broadway shows. We have people from every kind of sports that you could think of, Hall of Famers. So it really is amazing what we're able to pull together for this show, and it's really magical.
The magic begins tonight at 9 p.m. East Pacific time with the premiere of The Masked Singer. It's Fox's first original series of this still-unfolding 2019. Craig Prentice is the executive producer. We've got a live from Los Angeles right here this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Live, our first episode of the year. Sign up by me live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. If you have a question or comment for our guests, make the phone call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, time at 04 by name, gets 57 or 80 in the room. And by the way, it's 39 degrees here in the New York metro area at the top of the hour. First 3 episodes we are doing this week, coming your way tomorrow, an hour later than normal, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And our guest will be the greatest executive producers of Nickelodeon's first new series of the year. It's a comedy called Cousins for Life. It premieres on Saturday night. We'll have Kevin Coppolo and Heath Seifert. And on Friday, we'll have the famed advertising columnist from the New York Times and Media Village, Stuart Elliott. We said from an earlier episode, we'll talk about where interactive advertising is going and advertising itself in this interesting, what may be a very transformational year for both television and TV ads, especially with a lot of interactivity in the works. That's all coming up tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, Friday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Craig, how does the program work? How does the format work?
How's the format work? Okay, it's a really simple format. We have 12 famous people dressed up in these elaborate costumes. And the only goal here in the show is to stay around until the very end and be the last masked unmasked. It's simple in that sense, but it really is a lot of work for these individuals to last for 10 episodes, to come up with different performances each week. During the course of each episode, we have an incredible panel that will try to guess who these people are as they sing their songs. Now, mind you, some of the people are not professional singers but have incredible voices. The people that are singing in the show, they might be a pop star, but they might be singing country and western in the show. They're disguising their voices. So it won't be that easy to figure out who is behind the mask. Also on top of it, during the course of the show, they'll be having question and answers from our panel, and their voices will be disguised at that moment. But they'll be able to answer questions honestly to the panel as to who their identity might be. Also within the show, we have what we call our clue packages before the performances, where we'll give America concrete clues. If you pay attention really closely, and if you're a really good detective, you can figure out who that person is behind the mask. But you really have to pay attention. And at the end of every episode, one person will be unmasked. And also we'll reveal in that episode, too, some of the clues that were in that episode. So where if you paid attention, we could point back out again. If you saw this or if you saw that, that could determine who that person was. It's a fun show. It really is the elixir for the wintertime blues.
What are the keys, Craig, to making this program or this kind of program work is to have a panel that has chemistry. That's why I've Got a Secret, To Tell the Truth, What's My Line worked for so many years. You had that chemistry among the 3 or 4 panelists. Now, in this case, you got some very interesting panelists. You got Ken Jeong, the comedian actor, who, by the way, has seen the South Korean format from what I understand. You also have Jenny McCarthy, who you know from all over the place. Nicole Schlesinger, the former Pussycat Doll, and Robin Thicke. How did you find these four people, and what did you do in terms of trying to get the chemistry out naturally with these foursomes?
You know, another good question. You know, it really was when we went about casting our panel, it was all about, it really is. The hardest thing is finding chemistry for any panel. You can talk to many producers about that. It is really difficult. We were blessed to get four individuals that love the show, first of all. That was a litmus test. When I sent the initial sizzle of the Korean version to different celebrities around town, if they didn't come back and say, oh my gosh, I love this, I want to be part of it, we didn't even look at them twice, to be honest. We really wanted to get people who were passionate about this idea of trying to figure out who's underneath the mask and saw this magic in this very weird, bizarre show. When I first met Robin Thicke, I sent him the sizzle. He got it right away, and when I met him in person, he told me a story where he said, "I love to play a guessing game with my kid. When we're watching commercials or TV shows, and we know there's celebrities in who's doing animated voices, they try to guess who that person is." So he automatically was doing this show at home with his kid, and then of course he said, "I have a golden ear. I can tell you absolutely without a doubt who that person is. I can't wait for this challenge." So it was a fun test to put him through. Jenny loved it as well right away, and Ken did, and Nicole. I mean, they're all fantastic. But besides then getting them all motivated and happy about doing it, it was getting them together beforehand. We spent many days in locked rooms just getting to know each other, getting to feel the rhythm of each other, and understanding what the concept of the show is. And it really is. An extended labor for them to do that on their side. They're all very busy individuals, but they knew chemistry was the key, and the only way to get chemistry is to spend time with someone. And they did that, and I think it shows really well when you watch the show.
You also have a very good ringmaster, Nick Cannon. Of course, you've seen him on America's Got Talent. We know he is talented both in front and behind the scenes. I'm wondering how you made a contribution to you and your production team, both as a host, but also as somebody with a lot of production experience.
Oh, you know, I worked with Nick on Got Talent in the past. I think he's one of the best hosts that are on TV now, without a doubt. He has the most incredible ability to do hosting as well as just memorize. He looks at a script once and memorizes everything. But his improvisational skills are phenomenal. So it was really a blessing to have him as our host, and how it made my job a lot easier. Really, that was one thing I didn't have to worry about. Was he going to make his marks? Was he going to do this or that? And Nick as well was instrumental. We had we had Keenan as a guest judge in a later episode that he was really good friends with and helped for us to get on the show. He was extremely passionate throughout the taping, and he was one of the best partners, and he's also a co-EP on the show as well.
Mm-hmm. You're also working with two people who have great experience with this kind of television. One is Izzy Pick, who for many years was one of the key people at Dancing with the Stars. And you also have someone who, I'm happy to say, I think is the best dance director on television and one of the best people with live TV, and that's Alex Maninsky, who I wish he could have won an Emmy Award for his Dancing with the Stars work, but he did win one for Grease Live, and he's also doing World of Dance. I consider him one of the best people when it comes to doing this kind of TV. And I'm curious your thoughts about working with both of them.
Oh, you know what? They were incredible. You know, the team that we had behind the camera was exceptional. But their job was not easy at all. What they had to deal with, because all these celebrities were in costumes, and the majority of the teams of people that worked with these individuals didn't know who they were. There were only seven people on our whole team who knew who was behind the mask. going back a little bit, there was an earlier question about the secrecy. The secrecy level was, as some of our celebrities said, they felt it was Pentagon-level security, which it was. I think we spent more money on security than we did on the actual show. We had a special compound where all the celebrities had to be kept. If they had to come onto the lot in masks already, not the masks that they wore on the show, but other masks. No one knew who's going to pick up whom, any of the drivers. We had aliases all around. If they brought anybody with them, an agent, a manager, those individuals or a loved one had to wear masks and cloaks as well. And that was because if you're a manager, an agent, you know there's 7 high-profile clients you might have. It's kind of easy then to kind of figure out, okay, it's one of these 7 here. So that way no one even knew if there was a manager next to them or an agent. And that level of security actually helped us. Because during the course of the actual taping of the show, everyone was playing the game. The crew people, besides just the audience, everyone, when we had a stop down, when I would walk around the set, I would hear them trying to guess, I really think it's this person, I think it's that person. So I knew there was a little bit of magic happening by doing this extra effort of keeping everything a secret. But
yeah,
back again to the question of – go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying very deal with ODLF. I was thinking like you and Scott St. John, the executive producer on that show, which just got back last month on CNBC. She had a conversation about security because of what they have to go through with their show, and you're sort of doing a similar kind of process, although it's not third party. It's the fact that you still have to have a very high level of security, not only in terms of the singers, but also who wears what costume, who wears what mask, and everything else.
Oh, no, absolutely. And also the security is not only just, for us as producers, but we really want America, we didn't want any spoilers out there. We want America to play this guessing game. It's a really fun guessing game and family-friendly show where when everyone sits at home, they can all play along and they can try to guess. So, if we did our jobs as producers and try to keep the secret as best as possible from leaking out, I think that's a great thing because it just brings that viewing experience to another heightened level for everyone, who watches this show.
Craig, before we let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts about this. It seems to be that we're now in this era of spectacle game shows or spectacle physical endurance shows, programs like Titan Games, which is coming up on NBC, I believe later this week or next week. There's World's Best that James Corden is doing that will premiere for the Super Bowl on CBS next month. World of Dance, American Ninja Warrior. We seem to be in this situation of spectacle where you have a show like Masked Singer, and these others that really are going all out in terms of spectacle, in terms of really sort of an experience, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I think what broadcast television is at right now, it's all – everyone's in a battle to get eyeballs, in competing with Netflix and Amazon. And you have to have spectacle. You have to give people – something to watch and play along with, but I commend back again Fox on The Masked Singer. The great thing about this show, it's not a derivative format. No one's ever done anything like this. It was a bold move by them to pull this off and to give us the opportunity to make a giant show that is a spectacle. It wouldn't work otherwise. If you're seeing a peacock on the stage, if you didn't have dancers all around that peacock with lighting and everything else, it would just be a peacock on the stage. It just makes it a fun, smile-filled experience, and I think you need to do that. I don't think there's anything wrong with having big events on broadcast networks.
Mm-hmm. And Craig, what's next for you after this show premieres?
I will sit back and wait for the ratings tomorrow morning and hopefully some good news. I have a couple other shows in the works and that I'll be talking about later. But right now, everything's all about The Masked Singer and getting this off the ground.
and it is Fox's first new original series of 2019. That says a lot. The Masked Singer premieres tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Fox. Check the local news to the Fox station area that carries it. And for more details about the program online, go to Fox.com. The Masked Singer, Fox's first original series of this still very new year, 2019, tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Craig Plessis, the executive producer, thank you again for making the time hours before the start to be with us. Congratulations on getting the show off the ground. All the best to you and your crew for a great year and a great run with the series.
Thank you, Simon, and Happy New Year to you and your audience as well.
Thank you so much, Craig. A pleasure having you on. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Craig Preston, executive producer of The Masked Singer, joining us live from Los Angeles. One more time, premiere is tonight, 9 p.m. Pacific time on Fox, produced by Animal Shine, North America. We'll have more tomorrow we televised, but first we have some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. You know, last couple of weeks we've been telling you about this special offer where rather than get one audiobook for a one-month trial of Audible.com, you get three. Well, I'm happy to tell you that offer has been extended. So if you still want to jump in this new year and get yourself a great gift, the gift of hearing wonderful audio through Audible.com, you can. For a one-month trial, you get three audiobooks. One from the catalog of over 100,000 titles to choose from in every category under the sun, but also two audiobooks from the growing catalog of Audible originals. Everything from theater productions, one woman, one man shows, off-Broadway productions, and original audio material. And you can get two of those for the trial of one. Plus, if you continue your subscription, you can get up to three audiobooks every month, one regular, to Audible Originals. And remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, digitally wise, and information exploration as well. Remember, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, iHeartRadio. And all you have to do is just sign up for that one-month trial at audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. And don't forget, you get great customer service as well because Audible is owned by Amazon.com. So, AudibleTrial.com/televised. Get that one-month trial and those free audiobooks and hear for yourself why Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. This is Tomorrow Televised. We are the program all about the two. We are with you Mondays and Fridays normally. 3 p.m. New Pacific here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. We're also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And this is the first of three episodes we are doing this first, well, most week, you might say, of 2019. We are back with you tomorrow, 1 hour later than normal. Don't forget, later day, later time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Our guests will be the creators and executive producers of Nickelodeon's new comedy, Cousins for Life, premieres this weekend, Kevin Coppolar and Heath Seeper. And the famed advertising columnist for the New York Times Media Village, Stuart Elliott, will talk things interactive about advertising and more. That's on Friday's program. And coming up next Monday, our first Monday edition of the year, we got a great opening guest, the person that put women's wrestling on the map. Yes, GLOW, the glorified wrestling himself, David McLean, will be with us. We'll find out what he thinks about, well, putting that on in the 80s, the new Netflix series that is now its third season, and a brand new women's wrestling league he formed late last year with Jeannie Buff from the Los Angeles Lakers. It's called WOW, Women of Wrestling, and premieres the primetime series later this month on AXX TV. That's the cable network run by Mark Cuban of Shark Tank fame, and a few other things, too. David McLean from WOW, Women of Wrestling, he's my lead guest on Monday's episode. Also on Monday, we'll focus on a brand new PBS series called The Dictator's Playbook. It comes from Twin Cities Public Television in Minneapolis. One of the key executives there, Michael Rosenfeld, will be with us. So don't forget, we're on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, with those wonderful guests and more. 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And also on Monday, we'll kick off our 2019 Classic Trivia Question of the Week campaign. We'll have a question for you, and if you're first with the correct answer, you can win Loudermilk on DVD, the popular comedy series on AT&T's Audience Network. Episodes of Season 2 on DVD. If you're first with the correct answer when we post on Monday, you will win. And to do that, remember, all you have to do is email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you missed the question on Monday, we'll post it Tuesday morning on Facebook and on Twitter. We'll meet the new co-star of Bosch, who is on a campaign to have more Asian Americans represented in front and behind the camera on television. And also, we'll remember one of the great TV theme lyric makers, Norman Gimbel. That's all coming up after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. Excuse me, the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio and www.speaker.com. Together, reaching over 30 million listeners around the world every month and growing. At Blog Talk Radio, it's your home for Kings in the Morning, one of the most unique weekday shows around. Check it out tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best weeks are available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marvy Televised, our first episode of 2019. Simon F. with you live from New York, 39 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy you're with us for the program All About Television, first of three episodes we are doing this week. Another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, phone call from you, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have 57 already in the room at SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our second guest today is about to become the new co-star of the popular Amazon mystery drama Bosch, going into season 5 later this year. But he also is doing something behind the scenes in order to increase diversity among Asian Americans on television. Joining us live from Los Angeles is Tim Leatherbus. Tim, welcome in.
Hey, how you doing?
Very, very fine. Thank
I'm
you.
Glad
congratulations
to be here.
On jumping aboard Bosch.
Thank you very much. I should say, you know, when you say co-star Bosch, I mean, there that show's got so many cast members on it, it's like everyone's a co-star. But yeah, it's such an amazingly talented cast, and I'm really thrilled to be a part of it.
And we'll talk about your role there in a bit. By the way, it celebrates its fifth season on Amazon, one of the longest running playing on that service. They're on smart TV sets and smart devices. No question that last year was a breakthrough year for Asian Americans in a number of ways in the media. One was Crazy Rich Asians. Another was Angela Kang becoming the executive producer of The Walking Dead, one of, I think, one of the most diverse casts and crews in all of television. A number of people involved with Crazy Rich Asians have gotten production deals. Justin Lin just got a major deal with Amazon, I believe, to produce television shows. He's been very big on reboots lately with shows like SWAT and MacGyver on CBS. What do you think of Asian American diversity right now in television? And where do you want to go?
Well, I think we're at a place where we haven't been before, to be quite honest. I've been involved in this game since the early 90s, and when I first came into it, you know, it was few and far between the roles and the types of roles that were worthwhile, as well as, you know, you would know who was a series regular. Now I look around and there's so many frickin' people working, you know, I can't keep up. And so it's only going in a positive direction. You know, that said, we're still at a point where, you know, this is kind of like a big transitionary period. We've had a situation where we had a lot of success here in 2018. And, you know, the whole thing about, for me, along with, you know, it's important for Asian and Asian Americans to be working in Hollywood, but the real thing for me is diversity. That when I look around anywhere where I'm working in Hollywood, I want to see society reflected back at me like I see when I'm walking down the street. And I want to see that reflected back to me in the screen. And we're seeing it more and more happening. And I think a big deal has to deal with, you know, streaming services like Amazon and Netflix and Hulu. I think they've really been pushing that envelope.
As I mentioned, some of those services and others have, as well as individual production companies, have been making major deals to have some of these producers, directors, writing talent do shows for them on a regular basis. Some of the contract with Chandler Rhimes and Kenya Barris and Jenji Kohan and others have done with, I mean, the Justin Lin deal, I think, with Amazon. John Chu, I believe, one of the key people involved with Crazy Rich Asians, has his own long-term production deal, a few others like that as well. What do you think that long-term agreement is going to do for the Asian-American TV community?
Well, I think the more deals you have like that, the more people of color who are getting in positions of decision-making and power in the industry, the more it's only going to help us to be able to, as say for me as an actor and for my brothers and sisters who are in the business, it's only inevitable that more roles are created because they're coming from the brains of those people who are in the decision-making seats and the roles. So it's just inevitable. And the fact that we're seeing, you know, the big thing over the last handful of years, and this is something that I was pushing in the 90s, was that it just makes good business sense to, you know, increase your demographic, your audience. So when you have roles that are worthwhile, that are, you know, filled by people of all types of, you know, inclusive, you know, whether it's color, gender, identity, what have you, those people are going to come and watch. And, you know, it's now that we're seeing success, the catch here is that we want to make sure it doesn't get to the point, yeah, diversity is great for business, but that can be flipped on its head, so to speak, where they start, whenever you see something not be successful, you go, oh, maybe diversity isn't that great for business. Well, no, that's BS, because you look at all film and all television shows, et cetera, and it's about great storytelling, great, you know, production value, great, you know, entertainment, and then finding the audience. And sometimes, yeah, things don't find an audience, but you don't look at, you know, people who we've seen successful in the past who aren't a person of color have bombs, and then all of a sudden their careers, you know, they make a decision saying, oh, well, we can't do their stuff anymore. We can't go that direction anymore. No, now it's just about, it just makes good, it's just good storytelling, compelling storytelling that's inclusive, and that sells in general.
In recent years, Tim, we have seen women of color from who are on television, like America Ferrari, Gina Rodriguez, Regina King, Viola Davis, form their own production companies. Is anyone among Asian American women, whether it's Lucy Liu or Michelle Kwan, who is now on Star Trek Discovery, which by the way starts second season on CBS All Access later this month, are any Asian American, Constance Wu from Fresh Off the Boat, are any of them thinking about forming their own production companies to ensure that they have a role they can continue to put forward in getting shows off the ground?
You know, I can't answer that fully informed, but I do know that I know female artists that do have a business sense, and I can see them moving in that direction. I'm not aware of it right now, but I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing that occur in the next few years if the trend continues as it has been.
We are speaking with the new co-star.
And I think...
Go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say really quick, I just want to add to that, you know, it's probably going to come either from, say, someone like a Sandra Oh, who's getting a lot of play right now, or someone like, you know, whether it's someone like Adele Lim, who is one of the writers of Crazy Rich Asians, and, you know, she starts getting the cachet from that, and those types start, you know, sinking their teeth into it.
And, of course, we should point out that Sandra Oh is the co-star of one of the great success stories of last year, Killing Eve on BBC America. Every episode had bigger audience than one before, got nominated for Emmys. I'm sure we'll be in the midst of the Golden Globes. Let's not forget that Sandra is also one of the co-stars of the co-hosts of the Golden Globe Awards this coming weekend on NBC. So her star is rising like crazy. I was also mentioned too that Kevin Kwan was also involved in Crazy Rich Asians, also has a production deal with XCS Entertainment to develop a television series. So, again, more and more of these situations involving Asian Americans on television in front and behind the camera are happening. We've got Tim Linovich joining us today from Los Angeles. He is the new co-star of Bosch, starting its fifth season on Amazon later this year. We have on smart TV sets and smart devices. And Tim joins us live this half hour on Smart TV Televised. Simon, I'm glad we're you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us on our first episode of 2019, the program about television. Coming your way on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. If you have a question or comment for Tim, get the ring going, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Later this half hour, we will have an update on our Smart TV Televised Remember segment of last Wednesday, dealing with one of the great TV theme lyricists of all time, Norman Gimbel, who passed away before last year ended. Tim, another success story, by the way, this year, this past year, was The Terror on AMC. which, by the way, had an Asian American executive producing, Su Hu. This year, they have a new production team led by Alexander Wu, who did True Blood. And what's interesting is it's going to deal in a very unusual way with the Japanese internment here in the United States during World War II. And George Takei, who, by the way, knows a lot about that subject, is going to be on board as an advisor. And I was curious what you thought about that project.
Yeah, humbly first, I want to say I just want to make a little correction. It's George Takei. And I'm excited about the project. I'm actually – I watched the first season of The Terror and thought it was brilliant. And the fact that they're covering and internment, et cetera, is really exciting to me, because in the past I would have been – I would have had red flags, you know, about how it was going to be covered and was it going to be stereotypical and all of that. But I think this team is intelligent, and the fact that it does have, you know, an Asian American exec involved with it, that George Takei, I don't think would sign on if it wasn't, you know, on the level, because George, you know, he was interned, his mom was interned. He's been involved in the internment experience. He's huge in the Japanese American community in terms of pushing the issues on this, and so the fact that he's involved, that lends a lot of credibility to me.
And what's interesting also is that yesterday, Sci-Fi reran his episode years ago for The Twilight Zone called "The An Encounter with Neville Brand," where he's the co-star in that. A very interesting. A very off-kilter Twilight Zone episode. It was very controversial, let's say, back in the early 1960s. But he gives a terrific performance in that film. Of course, that was pre-Star Trek. And it was interesting that Sci-Fi put on that episode yesterday as part of its annual Twilight Zone marathon.
That's cool. I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on you know, how controversial it was and how well it was done. But, you know, I love George to death, and you know, he's one of the forebears for us.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to have both of the executive producers of The Terror on last year, and I'm thrilled that they got on a bunch of 10 best lists, and I'm very excited about this second season. And as soon as we know when the show is going to run, we're going to try to get Alexander on the program, and maybe George as well. We'd love to have both of them on our program at some point when that is happening. Are there any other projects that you know of coming up on television this year that you're aside from The Terror, that you're particularly excited about?
Well, I just saw that John Briones, who played, you know, the father in the Versace flick or show, he has just signed on to be a part of Netflix series Ratched, which is a prequel to the film One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And he's a wonderful talent. So it'll be interesting to see him involved in that. You know, other than that, I know that Atlantic Condor, they got a second season for, I always get the title wrong, but it's what, to all the boys who I love, or something
before.
Like that. Do you,
to all the boys,
yeah,
I've
love
before. The Netflix romantic, the rest is rom-com that did very well last year.
Yeah. And so that, that has a second season now. I love being a part of Bosch, so that's also very cool. You know, it's like I said, there's so many things. Every time I, you know, it used to be that, you know, a friend would say, I'm going to be on this, and you would get like emails back in the day, please watch me on this, and it would be a one and done thing or something like that. And now it's like when you turn on a show, you know, we have what? I don't know how much content is out there now between all the streaming services and network television, et cetera, and cable. But I know that, you know, it's in the 400s, I think, that's produced each year or so. And I am excited that I can just watch something, like I said before, that reflects the society that I live in. And when I see something that now, when I see something that doesn't make sense to me, when, you know, if it's not reflecting the society I live in, and it's not because it's part of a very good reason why it would be like that, then I don't have any tolerance for it. I don't have any time or patience, and I just go to something else that I can watch because it's all around me. I can watch anything I want. And so that's exciting to me that I can't even tell you, you know, I can't keep track of all the productions and shows and stuff that are representing. I mean, it really is an exciting time that we're involved in, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Tim, is there a particular direction that television could do? And I realize that, and we've said this many times on this program over the years, that diversity is not something you have with a silver bullet. It's something you have to attack on all different levels, the show level, the network level, the service level, the talent agency level, the production company level, the studio, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a particular direction you wish would be applied more to expand diversity on television, whether it's more diversity writing, producing, directing programs on the part of studios or networks or production companies, or doing more than on a year-round basis, whether it's trying to open the doors to the TV festivals to encourage more people to create pilots that would be presented at those events? Anything that you said?
Yeah, I'd love to say all of the above to a certain extent. I think a big thing is writing and directing that, you know, and in television, the writers are the producers. So I think the more diverse that room is, the more we see diversity reflected, because the more it's in the consciousness to do this. I know that it's very much in the consciousness to have diversity right now, that whether it's executives above because of the fact that, you know, whether it's for they realize you can get more audience, more eyeballs watching your project, or whether it's because there's pressure coming from another area, you know, regardless, whatever all of the above is there, it's definitely moving in the right direction. And what I do want to see is that, you know, along with persons of color in terms of on and behind the screen is again, more women. I mean, I can't tell you the projects that I either I'm a part of or watch, and it's helmed by a female perspective, and it just, for whatever reason, is just really refreshing to me and so worthwhile to watch, and sometimes a lot more entertaining. So it's just a matter that, you know, it's the old way is throw it out the window.
Is there still in your community a call for having a network like a BET or a TV One, or the choices that African Americans have in terms of networks, or Univision or Telemundo among Hispanic Americans, to have a full 24/7 network for Asian Americans?
Yeah, I'm not aware of that. I remember there, you know, a long time ago, there used to be a lot of talk about something like that. I have a feeling that if there are talks about having a network, that it's not just Asian American, but that it would have Asian content as well involved. And, you know, how that's done, I'm not sure. But I wouldn't be surprised if we do see something like that. But I don't think it's, you know, happening tomorrow. I certainly haven't. No one's been talking to me about, hey, did you hear about this? So, If it is, it's close to the sleeve right now.
Mm-hmm. We've got a number of efforts that Comcast at one point at AZN, which I thought was really going to be, was a winner, and for some reason they dropped it. There is still MNET out there, I believe, and maybe one other, but it seems that it's not yet has reached the point of let's have a full-blown 24/7 channel where you have a lot of original content that Asian Americans or Asians are making.
Yeah, and you know, I think it comes into play more in terms of demographics when you're talking about those types of numbers and what's needed to sustain that type of project and commitment and network and channel, et cetera. You know, if you're doing that, you're not going to probably, if you're just talking about U.S. audience, I don't know if that's sustainable. If you talk about a global audience, then I think it's definitely sustainable, but then it's how do you make it work? Because there's so many, when you talk about Asian and Asian American, there are so many different ethnic backgrounds. So that's a definite challenge to take on. But if you're talking about, you know, just making sure to keep, for me, it's more important not just having a dedicated network or channel. It's much more important to just be dedicated to, again, reflecting society that we see around us, you know, by making sure, you know, and you don't have to put so much pressure. It used to be people, writers would say they were afraid to write a character of different ethnic background. Well, I think that's been thrown out the window, and it doesn't matter in a lot of cases, because we all grow up the same. Yeah, we might have parents or grandparents that came over from another country, but we are just here. You know, we walk and talk the same, and we have the same type of bents and character driven needs and desires and wants and actions, etc. So what you write for so-and-so for person A can be done for person B, can be person C. So it's just a matter of making sure that you do have A, B, and C in there.
It'll be interesting to see whether smart TV sets and smart devices, now that they have reached critical mass, provoke an Asian American programming service. We already have seen AfroLife.tv, which is distributed by smart TV sets and devices all over the U.S. and elsewhere, Red Reef for the gay and lesbian community. It'll be interesting to see if we see something like that not too far down the road. Before we leave you, let's talk about Fox. What character you play there, and how are things going on that series?
I play Ed Sung. I'm a retired patrol cop who is an investigator now for a new department. You know, the fifth season is based on Michael Connelly's book, Two Kinds of Truths. And so in those books, they have a CIU, which is Conviction Integrity Unit. And that's my partner and I. My partner is played by Bianca Kalik. Listeners might know her from she's done a lot of sitcom over the past decade, being series regular on Undateable and on Rules of Engagement. And she and I, we got along great from day one. But we're partners in this. She has a history, and we are investigating a previous conviction that occurred earlier that involves Bosch. And it's you know, it's one of the storylines throughout the season.
And you've got a guest shot coming up on NCIS.
Yeah, I just shot that a couple weeks ago, right before Christmas time. And that will be airing on February 5th. It's a couple days after the Super Bowl. And I play Detective Paul Atwood, who is I work in the Sheriff's Department in Virginia. And yeah, and that I can't talk about too much. I can just say I'm on it, but the producers made very clear that not to let out any plot points or anything like that, but it's a really worthwhile episode to watch. It's interesting.
And that'll be on
story.
Next month. Yeah, that'll be on next month.
February
5th.
Yeah, and they'll have commercials running during the Super Bowl.
For sure. And you can see Tim in Bosch going into Season 5 later this year on Amazon. And, of course, Amazon Studios, that is carried on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. So chances are you have it. And for more details about the program online, go to www.amazon.com. That's www.amazon.com. Bosch, going into its fifth year, produced for Amazon Studios. Tim Lunibus, thank you so much for coming on. Good luck with all your projects, and including getting more diversity for Asian Americans in front and behind the television camera. It's been a pleasure to have you on our first show of the year. All the very best to you, and good luck with Bosch, the whole cast and crew.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being on.
Same here. Take care. All the greatest.
All right. Happy New Year.
Tim Lunibus from Bosch, joining us live from Los Angeles. And now, before we leave you, it's time for Up, as in Update, where we catch up on some of the guests and topics we have in this program. And a week ago, we brought you our annual Tomorrow We Televise Remembers, where we pay tribute to the people in front and behind the TV camera who passed away over 2018. Well, shortly after that segment aired, we found out that somebody else had passed away last month, one of the great TV theme song writers, on the lyric side ever. His name is Norman Gimbel. And with his wonderful partner, the brilliant musician and composer Charles Fox, he did a whole slew of memorable TV theme songs. Laverne and Shirley, Angie, Happy Days, The Paper Chase, song performed by Steels and Cross. One of my favorites, Wonder Woman. Remember? Here's the first verse. All the world is waiting for you and the power you possess. In your satin tights, fighting for your rights, and the old red, white, and blue. Done to marvelous driving music by Fox and a great title sequence from one of the brilliant people in that field, the late and great Phil Norman. Wonder Woman, of course, with Linda Carter. Very big, popular show on ABC, then CBS. Ran 3 or 4 seasons. And, of course, one of the great memorable lyrics of Norman Gimbel. But you should know, he wasn't just a TV writer. He also wrote for movies, and he also wrote for Broadway, and he wrote for the Grammys as well. In fact, he was a Grammy winner with Fox for a song called Killing Me Softly with Her Song, the Roberta Flack hit from the early 1970s. And around that time, he also partnered with another great TV composer, David Shire, on the film Norma Rae. He won the Oscar for Best Song of that year for a marvelous tune called It Goes Like It Goes. Charles Fox and other people who've worked with Gimbel over the years will tell you that he was a brilliant lyricist, one of the very best. He always came up with the right words to fit the right song. He did so for so many years and so many decades. Norman Gimbel died on December 19th last year at the age of 91. And that will do it for our first 2019 edition of Tomorrow We Televise. Thanks to all of our guests for being with us, and thanks to all of you for tuning in. We are back tomorrow, 1 hour later than normal, when my guests will be Kevin Kuppelow and Heath Seifert, the creators and executive producers of the new Nickelodeon comedy, Cousins for Life, premieres Saturday night. And on Friday, at our regular time, we'll have the famed advertising columnist, formerly the New York Times and Media Village, Stuart Elliott, second time on the program. We'll talk about where he sees TV advertising going, especially the possibility of interactive ads, which I'm sure was heightened by Bandersnatch, the Netflix Black Mirror special episode that's getting so much play for its interactivity. And don't forget, next Monday, Dave McLean of Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling and Wild Women of Wrestling will be my lead guest. Also, from PBS's new series, This Is Playbook, Cincinnati's Public Television executive Michael Rosenfeld. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Or go check out the podcast version anytime you like. It's available 24/7 on iTunes, also on Blog Talk Radio, and Speakers podcast app, also on Apple TV's podcast app, and the iHeartRadio podcast network. Remember, we love to hear from you. What do you think about today's program? What's your thoughts for where TV is at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. Remember, always, we appreciate what you have to say because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate, BTR, is Candace Williams. And he chose Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of BTR are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Audible.com, talk about partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and an Amazon company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For 3 free audiobooks and 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your second day of 2019. We're back tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. You know where. BTR and Speaker and the IR Radio Podcast Network. Until the next time, stay well. Stay tuned.